A fugue theme is called a subject. So the proper main character in a fugue is the fugue subject. Please, proper terminological nomenclature is what separates the washed from the unwashed, the cognoscenti from the uninformed. A fugue subject. Now, a fugue subject is a very special sort of melody. It's not your everyday theme. A fugue subject is to a regular theme what an Olympic gymnast is to the rest of us. An Olympic gymnast can do things with their bodies that defy gravity and cause me great physical pain just to watch. Yeah, I'm inspired by it, but it hurts when they do that stuff of bending their bodies over, and I'm not even going to get into the ramifications long term of what this might be doing to a spine. In any case, a fugue subject is like that Olympic gymnast. A fugue subject has to be capable of being inverted, turned upside down, and still sounding like music. We have to be able to chop it up and put it back together again. It has to be able to work in canon with itself. It's a very special designed melody, specially designed to do all kinds of special things. The reason why we call it a subject and not a theme is the same reason why we call our cadaver at med school a subject and not a theme. Because, like a fugue subject, we have to cut up our cadaver. We have to open it up and explore it. And I trust, when we're done, sew it back up. So it is with a fugue subject. It's a melody built to be dissected, manipulated, and then ultimately sewn back together again. In fact, the entire point of a fugue is to see how many different ways our subject can be overlapped with itself and other melodies generated from it, broken down into smaller motivic units, compressed, expanded, inverted, made to work in canon with itself, and so forth. So, why is a fugue such a quintessentially Baroque procedure? Because it displays so beautifully the great Baroque duality. On one hand, melodic extravagance and exuberance, tremendous number of melodies on the surface, and on the other hand, iron-fisted procedural control. On top of that, fugue is a perfect illustration of the Baroque predilection for logical and systematic examination of something. In this case, the thing we're logically and systematically investigating is a melodic idea, the fugue subject. It is observed, it's codified, it's dissected, it's reassembled. Real Baroque intellectual stuff, this. Now, to my taste, the most expressively and polyphonically intense and technically accomplished fugues come from the pens of North German composers, where intellect, polyphony, spiritual power are more important than mere pretty melody. Bach, of course, is the master of the fugue, and one reason why is he combines this almost Italian ability to write a beautiful and memorable melody with the German intellectual complexity and spirituality that good fugue writing really needs at its highest level. So, no one does it better than Bach, so we will start our examination with a Bach fugue. We move on now to the parts of a fugue. There are three essential parts to any fugue, no matter how simple it may be or complex. The first and most recognizable part of a fugue will be what we call the exposition. And I would make five observations about fugal expositions. Number one, in the fugal exposition, the subject is stated successively, telescopically, in each individual voice until all the voices of the fugue have come in. By the way, the word voice. We're going to listen to a fugue at first written for harpsichord or keyboard. Then we're going to listen to a fugue by Handel written for an orchestra. Despite the fact that these are instruments, we're going to call the individual parts of a fugue voices because Bach and Handel called them voices. And that's how we should think of a fugue. The first fugue we're going to listen to is a fugue for three voices. So in the fugal exposition, point one, each voice comes in successively until all the voices are in. Now, once all the voices are in, we should hear an equal balance between them all. This is an important point. We are more accustomed here today to homophony than to polyphony. So we are accustomed to hearing what is on top as being more important than what is in the middle or on the bottom. But when we listen to a fugue or any polyphonic combination, of voices. We can't make that mistake. We've got to hear each voice as being equally important, top, middle, and bottom. So we've got to hear differently. We've got to hear in layers rather than just on the top, on the surface.